Hello everyone, welcome to Sustainability Bites, the podcast sponsored by Switzerland Partners. My name is Felix Lengers. This episode is part of a series highlighting the ins and outs for the agriculture, food and health sectors during the Belgian presidency for the EU. As today's guest, I'm very pleased to introduce Caroline Bitterbier from Bond Peter Leefmilieu, with whom we will discuss the developments around plant-based and novelty foods. Welcome, Caroline.
Hi, and thank you, Felix, for the invitation. Happy to be here.
I'm very happy to hear that. Could you tell us a bit about yourself and how you ended up working for Bond Peter Leefmilieu?
Sure, yeah. So after my studies, I actually initially ended up in a food ingredients company for about 7 years. And it was very interesting because I was able to work on sustainability there as well. I had some different roles and came into contact with the reporting, sustainable sourcing, SMETA audits, life cycle assessments, all kind of exciting stuff. But after a while, I was also looking for an opportunity to come back to Belgium because I was working abroad. And when I saw in 2022 the announcement for a job at Bond Peter Leefmilieu that was kind of combining environment and business, but in a different way, I jumped on the opportunity. So there you go. So it's been a bit longer than 2 years. And maybe for people that don't know the organization, Bond Peter Leefmilieu is the Flemish network organization that connects kind of all environmental nonprofits that are active in this region. They also have a broad range of projects of their own, and I'm mainly spending my time on Next Food Chain, which is the first network for plant-minded food businesses in Flanders. It's an initiative that we took in 2019 together with Provech Belgium, an organization that is also known in other parts of Europe under the Provech International flag. I've been very happy to be in this space ever since.
I'm very happy to hear that you really found your place in the Bond Peter Leefmilieu. And now moving on to the second question. The Belgian presidency talks about ensuring food security and sustainability in a more general sense in their program. However, despite potentially being able to contribute to achieve these objectives, plant-based and novelty foods are not really mentioned anywhere in the program. So how do you feel about this? And do you believe the priorities set by the Belgian presidency regarding sustainable food production are ambitious enough if it does not specifically highlight plant-based and novelty food as means to achieving these objectives?
Well, the short answer is no, we don't think they are ambitious enough. But let me elaborate maybe a little bit more. I think, first of all, it's the Belgian presidency comes at an interesting time. It's the end of the five-year term. We have the elections coming up, of course, in June. Ursula von der Leyen is also, wants to be re-elected as president. And many stakeholders are still sort of trying to push through some last-minute deals. So that's definitely an interesting background to everything going on at the moment. And then, of course, the Belgian team, they set an agenda in advance and communicated their priorities. That's basically where we already saw a missed opportunity because plant-based food was clearly not necessarily on top of their mind. Yes, it's mentioned in some events that are set up, etc., but a lot more could have been done. It's also interesting to point out that some existing initiatives in the food space have been absent from this presidency. For example, the Sustainable Food System Framework. It's an initiative where a lot of people have put in a lot of work already for many years. It was supposed to be wrapped up back in 2023. That didn't happen, and now it is absent as well. So it's really a shame in general that these topics, sustainable food, plant-based food, are not prioritized more. And especially because we also know that the European consumers, they really have a growing interest in these topics. I think there was some really interesting research done by the Smart Protein Project, which is a European Horizon project that also has some Belgian partners involved. Some of the data points, they show 53% of Europeans intend to increase their consumption of legumes, like the lentils or beans or other protein-rich crops. 40% want to consume more plant-based alternatives. So there is really already this interest. And at the same time, I think these interests could be even more if more people would be aware of the benefits of a more plant-based diet. European Union could really play a big role there to increase the awareness. Think about health, for example. There's some really staggering data out there, and one we like to use, like in Belgium alone, if 10% of the Belgian population would eat more plant-based foods, we would save about 1.5 billion euros in health costs in the course of the upcoming 20 years. I mean, those are really big numbers. But of course, also for the environment, I think maybe people listening to this podcast are very familiar with the numbers, but a lot of other people are still unaware. But for example, if we were to replace half of the animal products that have the highest ecological impact with plant-based alternative, that would really lead to some major, major reductions in environmental impact. And we're talking like more than 50% less use of land, 33% less greenhouse gas emissions, 32% less acidification of soil and water, and so on. So there's so much to be gained there. At the same time, I wanted to highlight shortly that there's all the things that you put on the agenda in advance, and then life happens, right? And so we see that a lot of things that we're maybe not supposed to take up that much time and attention have become important anyway. And of course, the key example this presidency, I think, is the farmers' protests that are also happening in Belgium and in many other places in the EU. And I mean, this is really a situation that is unfolding as we speak. So I have to be a bit careful here, maybe also in what I'm saying, but unfortunately it looks not that great so far in general. From an environmental point of view, thinking about, for example, legislation about pesticides that has been cancelled already. Farmer associations are demanding all kind of changes to the COP, to all kind of environmental legislations. But we really don't think that this is the solution, or that this is going to help the farmers in the long run. So instead, there could be an opportunity for clear frameworks that take both agriculture and nature into account, that helps farmers to transition to a system where they really manage to get a good livelihood, good health, while reducing some of the negative impacts that we see. So it's really a shame that this is playing out the way it is at the moment.
Yes, thanks a lot for these insights, Caroline. And now moving on to climate and animal welfare, you already touched upon this briefly. But despite the positive impact on climate and animal welfare, there's quite a lot of resistance against some novelty food developments, such as cultured or cultivated meat, as some groups see it as a threat to their culture or their job security. In November 2023, the Italian government even passed a ban on the production and use of such lab-grown meat. So how do you perceive these developments, and how do you think the perception and resistance to such novelty foods could maybe be changed?
Yes, we're aware of the developments in Italy. And first of all, I would like to state, so plant-based and innovative proteins, it's not just cultivated meat, of course. There's also the legumes that I already mentioned, right? The lentils, beans, chickpeas, etc. But also other products that have been around for many, many years, like tofu and seitan. There's so many options, and there's something for everybody. But yeah, cultured meat is in the eye of the storm at the moment, and in a way, it's not completely unsurprising. It happens often when a new product is coming up or new innovations that it brings some change. It can create some unrest. But it is really a shame that we see that the Italian government is taking this stance where they basically try to cancel out a whole new industry that has a lot of potential. We don't know all the answers yet regarding the impacts of cultivated meat. A lot of people are looking into this. There's some promising results. Some of it we don't know yet, but it should at least be possible to really investigate this further, we think, right? And it is also, of course, interesting to see that some of these developments, some of these voices that speak out against these, this industry or these technologies are also fueled by groups that have their own financial interests in mind. And I think this is really where governments should take an objective stance, look at the data, and focus on health and sustainability when making decisions. So regarding the fears on job opportunities, it's definitely important to strive for a just transition here. So a new opportunity, a new industry can bring a lot of opportunities. But of course, the question is, who will take those new jobs? And it might not be the farmer who is currently today active in animal husbandry, for example. But this is, again, where the government can really play an important role and can make sure that everybody is supported in the transition and find their place there. Regarding the perception, as I mentioned at the start, not everybody is interested in trying these products, and that's also fine, right? There are many different options in the plant-based and innovative protein space, something for everybody there. But if you do reject the idea, it should be based on correct information. And again, that's where the government would have to be objective. There are a lot of false claims going around, and the government should support the dissemination of correct information. I think what's also interesting to keep in mind, and it's especially in the context of Italy, food habits actually change a lot faster than we maybe think. And there is an Italian academic, Alberto Grandi, that has done some really interesting work in this context. I could recommend it. And he actually has a podcast, among other things, but he talks about how a lot of Italian classics are really not as old as we maybe think. So tiramisu, for example, it only started coming up in the 1980s. So really not that long ago. Also, pizza, the ultimate Italian dish, up until the 1950s, many Italians were not familiar with it at all. So I think that really shows how fast these things can change, and as a group, how easy we actually manage to adapt to new realities.
Thanks a lot, Caroline. So moving on, to stimulate and mainstream microalgae as a protein source and ensure its food safety and quality, Schutterij & Partners created the microalgae platform a couple of years ago. And it currently serves as a platform for the exchange of best practices and consists mainly of Dutch companies, research institutes and government institutions. However, whereas legislation in the Netherlands regarding microalgae is quite strict, in a country like Italy, microalgae can more easily get a biological label, which creates kind of an asymmetric market in the EU. What are some measures the EU could take to create a more uniform market for new food sources such as microalgae and stimulate innovation further, in your opinion?
Yeah, we think microalgae are great. We're involved with this resource through the Maestro project in Flanders. Here we focus on chlorella and spirulina, and especially as a source of protein. Very interesting products, and it's also great to work together with a group of partners. We have some Flemish growers. It's really a new industry, so there's some real pioneers there. But for example, also the academic institution Thomas More, that has been working with microalgae for many years. And it's actually a project that is also supported by the Flemish Agricultural Agency in the context of the Flemish protein strategy. So it's nice to have that support as well. But as you rightly point out, there are some discussions around the organic label. There's some rules out there. And of course, in theory, the interpretation of those rules throughout Europe should be the same everywhere. But in practice, we see that this is not always the case. And in a way, it's not completely surprising. Interpretations can be quite technical. Those are very kind of new products that we talk about, so maybe there's not as much knowledge yet. But a very specific example is around the addition of CO2 to the microalgae growing conditions. This is a situation where actually two different players submitted a dossier with ECTOP to have a panel of experts clarify the situation because of these inconsistencies throughout Europe. This is also a situation that is kind of happening as we speak. So we know in this specific case that the experts have given their advice, but then we also see that it's not so easy to follow the process for an outsider. It is communicated through different documents, but you have to really go and look them up. You're not really notified of what is happening when. So this is an example of a place where the European Union could really improve some of their processes. First of all, by making sure that the interpretation of, for example, these organic guidelines are as clear as possible from the start, so these situations don't exist to start with. But then also the process of clarifying them to make that really as smooth and quick as possible. Because, there's some room for improvement there.
Yes, thanks again, Caroline, for all these insights. So do you have any interesting projects coming up that we should keep an eye on?
I would like to use the opportunity to advertise for a webinar that we will organize on the 16th of April. It will be in Dutch, unfortunately, so maybe not for everybody out there. But we're also involved in another protein strategy project around local protein-rich crops, in this case, the yellow pea crop. Also very, very interesting, a lot of opportunities, I think, both for farmers, but also for other players in the food chain, for example, producers of plant-based foods. So that's something I can highly recommend. And besides that, of course, we have our Next Food Chain Network that I mentioned at the start. If anybody is listening and interested in learning more about that, please feel free to have a look at our website, www.nextfoodchain.be, or reach out on LinkedIn, for example. We would be very happy to tell you more.
Plenty of interesting projects for our listeners. Thanks a lot for that. And also thanks a lot for joining us today, Caroline. I want to thank everyone for listening. If you would like to learn more about the Belgian presidency or follow other agri-food developments, please check out our website and stay tuned for the next episode of Sustainability Bites. And have a great day.